Is everybody in? Is there anybody else wandering around that wants to come in? Let's get started. I hope you're all sitting comfortably enough, but it doesn't matter if not, because you'll be on the edge of your seats in a second. Who knows what these two are going to get up to? Considering the hijinks in the digitizer offices circa 1995, I think we better watch out for flying objects. Perhaps socks.
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 Is that what you said?
I've got a microphone. We don't need to do that. Did you say socks, Dan?
Yes. Is that the safety word?
Well, I don't know what's going on.
The Mr. Safety word.
Where am I?
Would you like me to introduce you? I have some...
You don't have to.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of this podcast.
Socks.
No. Socks. So, we have Mr. Paul Rose, a.k.a. Mr. Biffo.
Oh.
Yes.
You guys.
He's the writer of the legendary teletext column Digitizer, but then you knew that. You know who this guy is, and if not, please do ask him about his favorite topic, a.k.a. bins.
It's Mr. T's favorite topic. We're not one and the same.
And we also have Steve Horsley, stablemate of Mr. Rose. See what he did there. Who may or may not have drawn plenty of teletext horses in his time as a graphic designer for Teletext Limited.
Hello.
And I'd also like to introduce Mr. T over here, who is our fourth panelist. I don't know. Yeah! I don't know how much teletext art he's done, but he's there. And if you have any questions for him later, be thinking of them. Before we start, we have some housekeeping. We've got a collection for Mr. Cara Moon, real name Matthew, who's undergoing treatment for stage 4 cancer. Now, Matthew lives in Japan, where immunotherapy is not covered under health insurance. Any money donated here today will go towards this treatment. Thank you for donating. And we'd also like to mention our sponsors, Open Broadcast Systems, who provide broadcast software, as the name implies, for video and audio transport using off-the-shelf IT equipment. If you have an outside broadcast, they are the guys to contact. Also, if you need to run teletext subtitles, give them a call. Or visit obs.tv. I've put OBE here.
Is That's it OBE? Right, it is OBE.
Is it OBE?
Yeah, for some reason they call it OBS, but their website is obe.tv.
Oh. What does the E stand for?
Yeah, East. Eggs.
Open broadcast eggs. OBE.tv. And mention the Teletext Festival. I'm sure they'll give you a good deal.
I don't know why that's funny. They sponsored us. They're really lovely.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. Yeah. I'll hear no bad words against them. They're wonderful. As he flips to the right page. Okay, so this panel, as I've already mentioned, is going to be in one part now. Previously it was in two, but we've merged the two, and it's now an hour and a half long until approximately 25. If you can manage that long, guys, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. We might run out of things to talk about if we don't the first 5 minutes. Well, we can talk about... Steve and I used to go to school. Did someone burp then?
No.
God, sorry. What was that noise? Sorry, I might just imagine... Did someone burp? Really sounded like a burp. I'm drinking Diet Coke, so sooner or later it's going to happen, because that happens every time. I think I was on Dan's podcast and I've been drinking Diet Coke or something, and I just started belching. It was terrible. Is that on your one?
Well, that's okay. Yeah.
Anyway, what I was saying was Steve and I used to go to school. We were in the same art class together. And so if we run out of things to talk about, we'll just talk about when we were at school.
Oh, yeah. And the way we're based.
John, I'm sure is what you're all here for. Hearing two middle-aged men reminisce about their school days.
Yeah, it was only 35 years ago. And we were thrown out of art class.
We were, yeah. Mr. Galbraith.
Yeah, hated everything we did. That was a disaster, wasn't it, really?
And I can already see Dan squirming because he's like, this has completely gone off topic already.
Don't worry, I've got these two pages in front of me, but we don't need to stick to them. We don't need to stick to any of this. But I'd like to start off by asking, if I may, can you please tell us how you both came to design teletext pages in the first place? And that's the end of the question.
Well, we should probably start with me, because you came about it as a result of...
Through you, yeah.
Through me. Yeah. I mean, some of you may know this story, because I've probably wittered on about it on digitising things in the past. But when I left school... Actually, no, it's before I left school. My cousin used to work for Ladbrokes Racing, whose head office was where I live. And they were looking for a graphic designer. I was only 15. And she said, oh, my cousin's quite good at drawing. And I had a portfolio, which I remember there was pictures in there of an AT-AT from Empire Strikes Back and inevitably a picture of Marillion's guitarist that I'd drawn.
So basically anything you did in art lessons?
Yeah, basically, yes.
We were supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, the things that I was not meant to be doing in art lessons. And I went in and saw her boss, who was a guy called Ray Ezra, who I ended up nicknamed, who Steve became very good friends with, so I should watch what I say. But I nicknamed him Snake Ezra because I heard him laugh once and he laughed like a snake. And I rang him up once and went down. This is already going off at a tangent. I knew this would happen. Rang him up once and called him Snake Ezra in a funny voice down the phone and then hung up. But anyway, where was I? So I was working for Ladbrokes and I got a job there in my school holidays the first year after I left school before I started college. And Ladbrokes had a graphic system called LES, which was kind of not quite Teletext. It was actually slightly more advanced than Teletext. It had more colours, didn't it, for a start? Yeah. And you could mix colours. So you could have in a block of pixels, you could kind of mix white and red so that it looked sort of pinky. So it didn't just have to be the colour and black.
Yeah, and you didn't need a space for code either. You could actually have...
Yeah, yeah, butted up against one another.
So you could have two different colours in the same block, and it gave you a lot more...
And you could do animation, which was the best thing about it is you had 16, I think it was 16 frames of animation, and Ladbrokes in their betting shops had a row of six screens, so you could make a horse kind of run from one side to the other. And off the back of that, they also had the Oracle department, which I ended up working for full-time in the end, as it was called then, Oracle. And that's where I learned Teletext graphics, was because they needed someone to do the graphics for their Oracle pages, as they were in those days. And then when I left to go and work at Wembley Stadium, they asked me, did I know anyone who could do graphics or was any good at art? And that's where I kind of brought Steve in.
And it was great, because I remember I turned up and I had never seen the system before. And Paul just showed me, I think it was an afternoon, you said, here, sit down, this is what it is. And then you left.
Was that it?
That was pretty much it, I think. Yeah, I had the one, about half an hour of one day. And then I was back in the next day to do it myself. It was great.
Yeah. You weren't there when Mr. Galbraith came to visit, were you?
No.
Mr. Galbraith was our art teacher who hated us.
A regular spender at Ladbrokes or something?
No, well, we're getting off onto our school days again. He's just inevitable, sorry. But one week I had to teach a work experience girl how to do Teletext graphics. And at the end of the week, her teacher came in to check how she'd been doing. And of course it was Mr. Galbraith. I hesitate every time I say Galbraith because I'm trying not to say his nickname because it's not politically correct. I will inevitably slip up sooner or later. Mr. Galbraith came in, he took one look at me and you could see his face drop because it was like, oh, that's the boy that sat at the back of my class and flicked elastic bands at me once. But we flicked elastic bands at him. He was one of those teachers that had absolutely no kind of control over a class. He asked for it.
Are you sure?
He's dead now. It's really sad. It's really sad. I kind of felt really bad. I looked up looked him up on the internet, and he was quite a respected poet as well as being an awful man. And his funeral's on YouTube. Look up Robert Galbraith. You can watch my old art teacher's funeral if you want. We could put it on later if you like. We could all pay tribute to him. And his son reads a poem of his, I think, at the funeral. Christ, this has really gone off at a tangent, Dan. I'm really sorry.
The art of teletext.
Yep. Off you go.
Okay. So, Steve, can you tell us in your own words, and not Mr. Biffo's, how you came to start designing teletext pages in the first place?
Yeah, well, I left home when I left school, and I... There'd been a number of jobs and it weren't fantastic jobs. And I think, Paul, when I came back to where we lived, got back to be friends with... it was about a year and a half I was away.
Yeah, you were Southend.
Southend, yeah. And I came back and sort of settled down to a boring job in the local authority, answering telephones. And then I got this call from Paul, basically saying, do you want to come in and work on graphics at Ladbrokes? And I couldn't really say no to an offer like that. So, so I turned up, did some, it was very interesting. I mean, I do draw, I paint. You know, like I say, I think we did really well in our art class, even though Galbraith did hate us. Yeah, we did quite well. We actually got exams, proper exam results, even though he said we were going to fail everything.
What did you get? You get an A?
A star.
Yeah, I got B minus.
Yeah, he was right then.
Yeah. Yeah, but I did. We had a, it was like a 6-hour exam, wasn't it? I did it in 2 hours.
Yeah, I did about 25 minutes, I think. I was out. I did my preparation work after I finished.
Yeah, and I chose to do mine in pastels because it was quicker. I knew I'd be out of there. It was like we were meant to paint.
I did number one rule, don't mix your media. So I put everything. I put crayon, watercolors, oils, everything on this one
thing. And yet you got A?
A star, yeah.
B minus. No, there's no justice.
I know. yeah, so we went off, and I thought, this is something brand new. It's, you know, something I haven't seen. It's computer graphics. It's amazing. How could I turn this down? So I turned up, and you know, Labrick's paid quite well. So I sort of settled down and started working. It was, you know, 3 days a week, just sculpting these horses every day, horses and more horses, and horses jumping and horses running, and horses, and some jockeys occasionally. But it was basically it all the time. That's all it was, just sculpting it out of these blocks. It was interesting.
Do you remember that there was the LES system, the Ladbrokes one, had a number of blocks that were kind of pre-shaped that weren't kind of text pixels?
That's right, there were different.
Do you remember there was a horse in there, like a 4-frame horse of animation? And I scaled that up to like a big horse that could kind of run across the screen, and everyone went on about how good that animation was.
Was it in the system? Was it one of yours?
Yeah, no, well, it was one of mine, but I just basically had scaled up the little one. I never told anyone I did that until now. It was like I took credit for that horse animation for years. Well, it was like, that's a really good horse. Yeah, I know. It's a really good horse. Well, I did that.
Well, I think I took a lot of credit because there was a library of all your stuff in there as well. So quite often I actually just copied and pasted your work. It was great. They paid.
They paid you?
They paid me to copy and paste the work that obviously they couldn't work out how to copy and paste.
What is it, about genius steal or idiots borrow? I don't know. What's that saying? Sorry, Dan. Dan, I can see you starting to get itchy again.
But then I got a call from Paul a little bit later saying there's a job coming up at Teletext after he was working there. Yeah. And so I jumped at that. Yeah. And that was basically it. It was just, you know, creating art and getting paid for it. In a very basic way.
But you kind of more worked in the marketing department, didn't you?
At the moment it's Teletext, I wasn't lucky enough to do anything creative, so it was marketing. It was all basically palm trees, sunsets, aeroplanes taking off, aeroplanes landing. Basically, if you saw that, pretty much, that was most of the stuff I was doing for so long. And then after that, I was actually poached by an advertising agency who just did holiday adverts on Teletext, and all they did was holiday adverts, and they basically poached me and I went to work for them. So another year and a half of doing palm trees and sunsets for another company.
Was that soul destroying just to do the same things over and over again, or did you find that you got better and you by the end were producing palm trees like that?
Totally soul destroying. No, it was after a while doing the same things every day. I think that's why I did move on. I didn't stay. Paul had everybody. Well, I think because the clients were paying for their adverts, they wanted it to be theirs and they wanted to sign it off. So I think they'd seen every other palm tree and every other sunset and they're paying for it, so they want their own one, which is just unique to them. And but they could, obviously they were happy. But yeah, it was that. It was basically the same thing all the time. So Labrooks was horses all the time, and marketing department at Teletext was just basically airplanes, sunsets and beaches.
You did, on Jason's Teletext archive, there's an advert for a 3DO game, Return Fire. Was that you? Do you remember that? It looks like your work.
Possibly.
And that's got a tank on it.
Yeah, then it probably was. But the thing is, again, it's a long time ago. I mean, I think I left Teletext, my son was, so about 17 years ago, I left Teletext. And I hadn't really thought about it at all until recently when Paul said about this. Teletext was just something that I'd done for a long time and just forgotten about. And then seeing what Dan has done as well, and it's just hard to believe that it was still an interest in it. It's amazing.
So, this might be a good point to ask. You've both been getting back into Teletext art recently, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, you've been designing Teletext pages once again in the traditional format. How have you found this process? Do you find it therapeutic?
I mean, I've not done as much kind of proper art as Steve has. I've mainly done sort of stupid adverts in a digi kind of style. But yeah, I mean, when it was weird at first because it took probably about half an hour for it to all kind of kick back in. And then, I mean, it's such a cliche, but it was like, you know, riding a bike. And then I only ever did two. I did a kind of stormtrooper and a blue guy called Merc in the Mystic, who's by my favourite comics artist, Brendan McCarthy, that I used to have painted on my bedroom wall when I was 16. And I did those, and I did them really just to see if I could still do it. But, you know, it was sort of testing myself to see if I could still do Teletext graphics after 20-odd years. But I really, if you'd have asked me kind of 3 months ago, 6 months ago, whenever it is, that I started doing it, prior to that, if you'd asked me, I would have been unable to tell you how Teletext graphics worked or how I did them. It kind of completely gone until I started doing it. It was a really strange experience. But yeah, I found it really therapeutic. It was, yes.
Yeah, when Paul showed me the EditTF software, I don't know if anybody uses that, but it's amazing. It really is so close to the original editor, I find it. As soon as I found it and I'd seen all the stuff Dan was doing and stuff Paul was doing, I just sat down. I had to have a go again, and it's literally like Paul said, it took about 20 minutes, half an hour, and it was just all came flooding back. And then in the evenings, to be able to spend half an hour or an hour just knocking up a picture, it really was therapeutic. It's after I finish a day at work, to come home in the evening and just sit down and knock out a picture is really good. I never used to do that at Teletext because it was just the same things, and I actually get the opportunity now, and people are looking at it. I mean, my Twitter feed, I've got like 300 extra people than I had 2.5 months ago, just because I've been sticking Teletext pictures on there. So I'm really enjoying it. It is therapy. It's really nice. And I don't know if you saw the video that was on the screen earlier with watching the blocks go in place. I mean, I actually find it really relaxing to watch afterwards. It's the reason why I video them is just, it's just therapeutic afterwards, just watch these things come together.
Did you find that you missed, or at the time you didn't think you missed designing the Teletext pages, but when you got back into it again, you thought, oh, this is brilliant. I'm glad I picked it up again.
Yes, again, it's one of those things you don't know what you got while you got it. And I think being at Teletext, I think I missed a big opportunity by not perhaps doing more and not, you know, showing that I could do more there. So I think, you know, if we could go back in time, I probably would do or try to do more at Teletext.
I mean, I think for me, it was when I was there, it was soul-destroying because in the way that Steve sort of described. For me, it was little pictures the whole time. Cause the old Teletext index page used to have a block on the lower right-hand side. I don't know if any of you remember it, which had to have an icon in it of whatever that particular rotating part of the frame was. So if it was a story about, I don't know, well, you can probably guess, cats, it would be a picture of a cat. Forever, I was doing these little things that fitted into this little box. And it was early on that I suggested to the Teletext bosses about Turn of the Worm. Not the real Turn of the Worm, the cartoon character Turn of the Worm, because I wanted to do graphics that were testing me a bit more and were a bit more fun to do. So that's how Turn of the Worm came about. Because even that, and that was prior to Teletext launching. You know, already I was getting sick of doing these little graphics that were just no challenge at all. And that, again, you know, we'll talk about it later, is also why Digitizer came about, was because the graphics were so simple, they'd take me kind of about, yeah, all my work would be done in the first hour of the day. Now, nothing else to do. So, you know, I kind of started suggesting other things that I could fill my time with.
Yeah, I've got to say that I think Turn of the Worm was just, every frame of Turn of the Worm was just art. It was amazing. I never really paid attention to Teletext apart from Turn of the Worm. It was the only thing I actually watched. I didn't read Digitizer because it was rubbish, because I had an Amiga. So
we'll come back to that later.
So, which is one of the reasons I remember sitting the other side and just, I'm not going to join in with this because I bloody Amiga is not even.
Is that true? Are you really pissed off that we covered the Amiga?
That's why I was so pleased when they moved me down to the marketing department, because I don't have to hear you slagging off the Amiga all the time.
Well, no, I know.
I have to admit, I didn't read Digitizer either. I was a magazine man.
Did anyone here read Digitizer?
Yes, three people. Welcome to the Digitizer Festival. Do you know what Digitizer is?
Well, tonight's going to be fun.
So, Turn of the Worm was mentioned there. Paul, for the comics for Turn of the Worm, did you draw them out on paper first or just make everything up as you went along? And I guess that goes for the story as well. Did you plan out the story beforehand?
No. Nothing. I mean, it was, you know, I've never done any
any time with Teletext graphics, planning out by hand. It was all done sort of freehand. And yeah, likewise, Turn of the Worm, just come up with a stupid idea and then make it up as I go along. I mean, normally it would kind of be based around I'd want to draw something. So, I wanted to do a post-apocalyptic story once, so I had a time travel. I wanted to draw sort of post-apocalyptic landscape, so we had a Doctor Who spoof. No, it wasn't a Doctor Who spoof. It was a time-travelling Barbary ape. This is very specific, but I found a picture of a Barbary ape somewhere, and I made the time machine shake like a Barbary ape, and they went into the future, into this kind of post-apocalyptic world. So it was usually kind of because I wanted to draw something, then that the story would be based around that.
That's very inventive. So, going a bit wider, the alien thing on the front of the kids section. Do you remember that?
A green thing, was it? With
who
one
was
eye?
He? Did he have a name?
No, I bet I didn't even remember it until you've just mentioned it now.
Can we name him right now?
Yeah, if you want to.
Okay, what should he be called?
He was green, he had one eye. This is going well. Thanks for introducing this bit, Dan.
Well, I'm certainly very green.
One-eyed greeny. Before Turn of the Worm happened, there were various other character ideas that I came up with. There was this fuzzy blobby thing called Rascal, which that makes my skin crawl. And there was, I think, I don't know if it was meant to be a precursor to Turn of the Worm, but I had an idea at one point of doing a cartoon strip on Digitizer, which I think we came up with two characters called Moon and Pontoon, which was a guy and a little moon that used to follow him around. I only ever did one episode of it, and we never put it up. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, I guess we better ask you a question because we just had Paul talking for about 10 minutes. So
get used to it.
How many pages, Teletext pages, do you suppose you made over the years? Hundreds, thousands, tens?
Hundreds.
can you be slightly more specific? I mean, can you just be bang on specific with how many? Surely you've kept some kind of record of this thing.
Yes. specifically for this panel, we would hope that you would keep a record. So, any memorable ones apart from the palm trees and the horses?
No. There were some, like, the break pages you could have. There was a pages sort of, holidays on whatever page it was. I can't even remember now. And I'd have to do something that was slightly creative to advertise the holiday pages. And it was usually, a bird with a briefcase or, early bird deals. That was it, early bird deals. So it was like a bird with a suitcase. So, I didn't have the imagination Paul did. That's the thing.
That's rubbish.
But that would have taken me weeks to work that one out.
Well, I'm not going to ask Paul this, or maybe I will, but I'm going to ask you this first. What is the silliest thing you've committed to a Teletext page?
Well, nothing really, because I'm quite a sensible person. No, I don't know. It all seemed quite surreal. As soon as you're knocking stuff together with a few blocks and a bit of colour, it can look a bit weird, whatever you're doing. I don't think I've done anything particularly silly. I think I've left that to Paul, because, sitting there... There was quite a long time I sat sitting next, in the cubicle next to Paul and Tim and watching what they were getting up to, and Adam as well. And I just knew I just couldn't compete with any of that, so I didn't even try even thinking about competing with anything silly. Because these guys had silly, they're wrapped up. I mean, there was just nothing else anyone could do. So I just sort of stuck to doing what I was being asked to do. Outside of Teletext, I mean, just the recent artwork I've been doing, people have asked me to, I've been commissioned to do some things, or... I'm just doing it for fun at the moment, which is great, I think.
Would you have liked to swap jobs with Paul back when?
If I had, nobody would be remembering Digitizer, I think. No, I was happy with what was happening. I think the people who were doing the best job definitely were doing the best job. I was just there to do pictures. And I think people there just had to be somebody there just to do the boring pictures. So I was quite happy to do that. Just to be part of it was enough for me.
So you never...
I was going to ask Steve something. Do you remember that Teletext produced a little booklet called The Art of Teletext?
Do you remember that? I've still got it.
It was a little book,
somewhere.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a little book.
Like a Mr. Men book.
They put out. I don't know what they wanted it for. And it was, bear in mind, like Steve and I were the major graphic designers in the company. Pretty much all of the art in there had been designed by a man called David Staveley, who I know Tim is bristling at the mention of, who was the deputy editor of Teletext. It was like you produce this book called The Art of Teletext and you barely feature any of the art from the two graphics guys. Just the deputy editor had just done a load of special graphics himself.
No, I never saw
issued
that.
Issued it as an example of it's a dedication to David Staveley in Tim's first book. Yeah. There's nothing else about him in there, is there? It's just the dedication. Did you mention the postcard? The postcard with the polar bear.
I mentioned a postcard.
Yes. Maybe we'll mention the postcard again later. Anyway, I just...
Yeah, no, I wasn't even given a book. That's...
Maybe it was after or before, after your time. No, when did you leave?
I can't remember now.
Okay.
I can't remember. It all blurs into... 20
These
years
are
ago,
good anecdotes, folks, aren't they?
It was a long time. I was younger then.
Remember that thing? No. About that other thing, no?
Well, the Casbah was good for food around the
corner. Was good for food. Yes, there was a very good cafe next to Teletext that did very good bacon rolls. And it was always, sorry, I'm going to get off a tangent. I'm going to shut up.
Feel free.
No.
No, it's fine.
But I just used to go in there. In the end, they used to go, before I even asked for what I wanted, they used to just go, bacon roll and Diet Coke. Every morning, and that's what I would have.
Did you ever draw a bacon roll and Diet Coke in Teletext?
Well, probably not Diet Coke, because that would have been a... Ooh! Now, I did do a can of Coke at Ladbrokes, and after I worked at... Yeah, so the can of Coke at Ladbrokes was very good, because you could do shading. Because you use the... So it looked kind of 3D. And I did a Coke logo at Wembley Stadium because after I'd left Ladbrokes, I went to work at Wembley Stadium on the scoreboard, which, again, all pixels, you know, which was my area of expertise. Yeah, and certainly did an animated Coke logo at Wembley, but no, never at Teletext. So...
No bacon?
Not as far as I remember.
Consider this a challenge.
Okay, you wait. It's going to be the best bacon roll you've ever seen, Dan.
Bacon roll in Teletext. I look forward to it. So good you could taste the pixels.
Pixels?
The pixels.
Pixels,
yeah.
Get that?
Ladies and gentlemen, the first pun of the evening. How many more are there going to be before 11 p.m? Place your bets. So, Paul, I have a question for you here. Who was it that actually drew Bamboozler first? Was it you, or was it somebody else?
No, it was me. Yes. Because I remember Julian, who used to run Bamboozle, specifically asking for someone that was kind of a cross between Bob Monkhouse and, I don't know, a generic quiz show host. But I remember Bob Monkhouse was one of the specific people that he mentioned wanting it to be based on. So, yes, it was me. That's it. I drew all of them. I drew his whole family. Was it Bambette and Buster? And Brian. Brian was the sports guy, wasn't he?
Brian, yes.
Who you've got as a Twitter avatar.
I have, currently, yes.
I mean, Julian, who did Bamboozle, weirdly, was another Ladbrokes employee, which I just went and headhunted half of the people I work with at Ladbrokes to work at Teletext. Yeah, Jeff Scott as well. Yeah, who none of you know. But Jeff Scott was there. And then, we can't talk about Digitizer.
Breaking your own rules.
Yeah, breaking my own rules. That's how I roll.
That's how you bacon roll.
Good.
Is that good enough for Digitizer, Paul?
Well, yeah. It's all about the dad jokes these days.
Thank you. I think. So, did Bamba's design change over the years? Because I've seen some of Jason Robertson's earlier recoveries, and he seems very shocked by this. And Bamba seems to have a sort of larger jaw.
Jason, what are you watching on TV? You made me look over there, and there was someone... That's Steve Martin, isn't it? Okay. No, it was just something very odd going on. Glad we're keeping you entertained.
I think we should just stop and watch this.
Just turn it around.
Do a live commentary.
He's talking to a little girl now. I don't know what they're saying. Scene's going on a bit. She doesn't look very happy. He's wearing a blue suit. She's got some sort of stuffed toy in the crook of her arm. Oh, she's talking now. She's talking. Oh, yay. All right, Dan.
That's okay. I knew this sort of stuff would happen. It's fine.
Did the design of Bamba change over the years? I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe. I recently redesigned him as he might look now, which some of you might have seen. He's just sort of fat and bald.
Yes, I noticed you posted that on your recent Stress Me Do topic on digitizer2000.com.
I'm much better now, by the way, anyone that read that.
Good.
I only vomited 5 times in the night the other night. You laugh, but I did.
So,
and I had night terrors.
Oh, dear.
Is knocking at the back.
And is this fest anything like you imagined in those night terrors? Well, describe to the people out there in podcast land exactly what the night
what
terror was.
The dream that I was talking, again, this is Teletext Designers panel, everyone. Him and middle-aged man talk about his anxiety dreams. Oh, yeah, that was the one with the kids that pulled the bloody screen over between us and the audience. I was not happy. It was like, who's brought these kids in here? And there was little kids playing around. There was like about 5 people in the audience. And I'd gone out to kind of, because everyone had wandered outside. And I'm breaking my big rule here. There's nothing more boring than people talking about their dreams. But, dear, look at Dan. My God. He's like, what have I wrought? Go on, Dan.
It's okay.
It's over to you.
It's fine.
Any good dreams recently?
Not that I can think of, no. Okay. So, should we change the topic? So I'm going to, I think, address this to Paul, but it's also to Steve. Did you ever get any requests for art from readers?
Well, possibly. I mean, certainly on Digi, people used to write in and ask, can you do a reveal me do of something or another? But I don't know. I mean, where would I have done it? We didn't have a requests page as such. It's Frame It.
Yeah, the Frame It, the
Frame
children's
It,
art.
Which is the kids' art. Yeah, which I like doing.
Yeah, I like that as well. It's great.
We used to have a Turn of the Worm, wasn't really a fan club, but we used to send out signed pictures of Turn of the Worm, most of which were signed by a guy called Adam Keeble, who did our Chips and Teats on Digi. And it was just a photocopied piece of paper with a picture of Turner that I'd drawn. And I stopped doing that when some kid wrote in asking, dear Turner, please, can you fix it for me, for my parents not to split up? It was so awful that I stopped offering that service. Did he help? he made it worse. Yeah, so there was that request for Turner to intervene in some child's parental... Pick up.
Was Turner going to be the new presenter of the angst section then? Dear Turner.
Dear Turner.
That does that question, I think. So, you both worked in the same offices at Teletext. And we mentioned at the beginning sock throwing, but...
What is this?
Something I made up.
Oh, okay. Well, we did throw stuff across the office, so...
Yes.
But never socks.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What sort of things did you get up to? What sort of things did you toss across the office?
Well, Tim. Fruit. We threw fruit, yeah. There was a cherry stain on the wall above Dave's head. Dave was the guy that wrote the Planet Sound pages, and he sat as far away from us as imaginable. And there was, until pretty much the day I left, there was this big cherry stain on the wall above his head where we had a cherry throwing fight one lunchtime because everyone else had gone to the pub and it was just like us and Dave left in the office. Teletext Designers panel, everyone, sorry. I was asked the question, it's a legitimate answer to give. What did you throw across the office? Cherries. And swearing. Remember the swearing game? Quiz people.
Julian's.
What, we threw stuff at him?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, he was. He just used to sigh. Julian was the guy that did Bamboozle. He just used to sigh a lot, didn't he? The bang in the box with a tennis racket. See, we're giving it all away now. All the great anecdotes.
I was going to say, I remember when you guys were off somewhere and it was me upstairs and I was sitting in your desk doing work when you were away, doing something. And Julian was just so relieved. It was like he just like relaxed the whole week. We just chat. It was just like he was a different person, honestly.
There was another Teletext graphics artist, wasn't there? It sounds a bit Star Wars like. There is another. Do you remember Sarah something? She had very short hair. Remember a girl called Sarah? Because no, she sat sometimes when you weren't in the office, Tim. She sat where at your desk. She was there for quite a while.
You sure she didn't replace me, did she?
Oh, I don't know. No, because she was in the editorial department, and that was around the time that I was sort of doing more and more digi stuff. Anyway, so yeah, there was another Teletext graphics.
And then there was Ian Merry, who worked downstairs in the marketing department.
Oh,
he was in sales, but he moved into the graphics when I left.
Oh.
So I had to train him up pretty much in an afternoon.
Oh.
And then he left. And I think he's still doing Teletext. He's still head of design for Teletext now, whatever.
I don't remember him.
He was downstairs in the dark side. So there were still people down there doing it. So, yeah, I know there was Ian, and I think he's still there doing it now. Obviously not Teletext graphics, but he's in charge of design.
Dan.
Thank you. Now, when I make my Teletext pages, I cheat and I use a mouse. However, yes.
What?
Yeah. You didn't...
Heresy.
You never had such luxuries back when, did you?
They hadn't invented mice when we were doing Teletext.
Armus. What about Armus? Never mind. Nobody will get that.
I get it.
Okay, never mind.
Armus the Enormous. Go and listen to the podcast that I did with Dan where we went off on, surprise, a tangent about Armus the Enormous.
Yes, the mouse that invaded my bedroom. But never mind. Oh, that might be something for the dreams pile you're asking me. What do I dream about? Giant mice coming and getting me. There you go.
Enormice.
Enormice. So, how hard was it? How long did it take you to learn to code, basically, with a keyboard? Learn to code Teletext pages?
I mean, I don't see it as coding, because it's drawing.
Yeah, I see it more of sculpting. You know, you sculpt the shapes rather than draw them. Well, obviously, when you use a mouse, you are drawing, so we're not really doing that. We're blocking in and...
But you and I do something quite similar, which is I think, having watched your videos... We kind of draw a block out first and then kind of carve into it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, likewise, I see it as sort of, carving out something.
And you can change, it changes all the time. And I mean, with my ones, I can do the shape, I can do the picture. It's only when it comes to things like filling out the background and make it a bit more interesting. That takes me twice as long to work out how to do the background because it's not the actual design. The actual, what I'm trying to do is quite easy. If it was a face, if it was a, character. But as soon as I start trying to do a background, put in something there so it isn't just either black or a color, then that's where I struggle. And I think that's where it takes, well, not struggle, but that's where it takes a bit more time.
The thing that I'm always slightly envious of other Teletext designers who have got their finger on something called hold graphics, which I don't know if you've ever seen. You get a background color and then they put a color on top of it without kind of a black border around it. And you have to use something called hold graphics for that, which adds... I don't know if any of you... And perhaps we should even explain how Teletext works.
That might be a good idea.
The reason why you kind of have lots of kind of black blocks in Teletext is because every time there's one of those blocks, you're inserting a command code. So you'd put in one that is for a graphics blue or alphanumeric blue, depending on whether you're doing a graphics block or a text block. And each one of those codes takes up space on the page. And what was I talking about? Hold graphics. So hold graphics is another one which allows you to kind of have a different colour background with a different colour, with a other colour over the top. Is that clear?
This picture over here, that uses a lot of hold graphics.
Oh, yeah.
They were very good at it at Oracle right from the beginning.
So if you see that one, you've kind of got the cyan Oracle and Happy Christmas below it, which haven't got kind of black around them. They're just kind of on a blue background. Yeah, we probably should have had a Teletext page up that we could have dissected. What's Tim's making faces at me?
Who's organising this?
No, it's not whiteboard, is it? I could just draw on it anyway. No, it's fine. I was going to demonstrate it that way. I've explained it so beautifully, these people can picture it in their minds.
I'm so glad we got onto Held Graphics. Is it Held Graphics or Hold Graphics?
Hold.
Okay, Hold Graphics. I'll remember that for future reference. I've been saying Held Graphics.
It's not that. It's the other thing.
Thank you. All right, Paul, I have a question for you here. Do you mind? It's about Digitizer.
What? What's that, says everyone in the room.
Am I allowed to ask you a Digitizer question? It's not the evening yet.
Go on.
Where does the name Digitizer come from? I heard rumors there was such a particular device that turns scans or photographs into teletext pages. And indeed, Mort Smith mentioned earlier a digitizer. Did such a device ever exist? And did you ever use one?
I don't remember there being one at Teletext.
There was one.
Down in your marketing department. Yeah. Mm-hmm, get you
there was one. It was.
We didn't have one up in editorial.
No, because they had you.
Well.
No, there was one, yeah. And the digitizer, I think I used it once, but by the time you scanned in a photograph and it's just taking it down to blocks and colors, you might as well have done it yourself from the start. So basically, that's why we never used it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You've got to do so much cleaning up when you scan something in. I mean, I didn't have one, or I never used one at Teletext, but we had one at Wembley Stadium. And that's what I found then. You know, you scan something in, and it just put it up on the big scoreboard. So I used to use it to entertain myself during the day, and I used to kind of put my face on it like this and then go out and see my face on the Wembley Stadium scoreboard. This is in the day before kind of smartphones and things, so I don't have a photo of it, unfortunately, but that was quite cool.
But the digitizer just produced, I think it was just black and white, and I think you had to then put the colours in afterwards. Well. So there was so much work involved that nobody actually ever used it. And it probably cost them thousands of pounds, but it was never used for anything, as far as I know.
Do you think such a device would still exist today? Do you think we could track one down?
What, like a scanner?
Yeah.
It was basically, if it was anything like the one that I had at Wembley, it was just basically a kind of camcorder type thing on a wooden frame.
Yeah. Would you have liked to play around with it more?
No.
Well, taken out of context, that question could be considered quite rude, couldn't it?
Could. I'm not going to rise to the bait. I'm better than that, Dan Faramond. I played with the one at Wembley. Yeah, just as I say, purely for my own entertainment. But every time that I used it, it was just as much work to just do it by hand because of all the cleaning up. The way it worked, by the way, at Wembley, I might as well talk about this because it's pixel related. The scoreboard at Wembley, we had this crappy little PC with it, which had a tiny window on it, which approximated the Wembley scoreboard rectangle. And each of the pixels on this computer screen represented a light bulb on the Wembley scoreboard. And they were just literally just regular light bulbs. And part of my job was going and changing the light bulbs. So you had to kind of turn the screen on and stand down on the pitch and look up. And if there was a pixel missing, that meant there was a light bulb gone out. So we had to go up with a box of light bulbs and walk across this rickety gangplank and go into the scoreboard. And then you had to figure out which bloody light bulb was actually out of the kind of 2,000 that were in there, and then change it. Yeah, you didn't have to do that with teletext. Yeah, beat that.
No, I can't beat that. But can we go back to what Dan was saying? We all do graphics, and I think we do it in a different way. I know Paul does his. I've always been amazed how fast he can do teletext graphics. Always been amazed how quickly he could actually knock up a whole page. And it'd been stunning in one go. I know you're going to look at me like...
Yeah, well, it's the same with you.
No, well, me, it takes...
You used to do this at school.
Yeah, but mine takes...
Your pictures are better than mine. No, your pictures are better.
No, what I'm saying is my ones take half an hour or so to do a picture. You can knock yours up in 10 minutes, 5 minutes.
Depends what it is.
But then Dan draws his with the mouse, with the software, which, again, is a completely different way of doing it. So I just want to ask, how long does it take you to do a picture?
It can take up to an hour.
Oh, that's all right. 5 minutes.
You've got me beaten on that, though. Takes you about half an hour, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Again, that can be considered rude if taken out of context.
Yeah, it's about half an hour, 40 minutes for a complicated one to do, a whole screen We haven't got anything to show, but one of the main pictures would probably take about 40 minutes.
Okay, so, question for both of you. We're just wondering over...
He's picking up a trophy. No, it's not a trophy. It's a wine opener. He's sat down to open a bottle of wine. And he's got the cork out.
Rather suggestively.
It was a breast, didn't it?
What? Watching. It's a family event.
Speaking of family events, did any of you ever edit teletext pages while drunk?
Yes.
Can you elucidate? Can you possibly elucidate?
We did a teletext held a family evening where they asked all the employees to bring their family. In fact, my daughter, who stood at the back, who just loves me pointing her out, attempted to kick teletext editor. You've heard this story over the years. She was sat on a table and tried to. I noticed that she was trying to kick the back of his legs. But who can blame her? Ate him. Yeah, we and there was drink flowing at that. And it was the night that Frank Butcher left EastEnders. And so we very naughtily decided to put up a special picture saying goodbye, Frank, which we weren't allowed to do because you have to run everything you put up on teletext by the sub-editors. And we didn't do that night. But it was too important, wasn't it? It had to go up. You know, there was no time. He was going. Someone had to say goodbye to him.
I stayed over one night to do a night shift. I think it was New Year's or Christmas. And there was quite a lot of food in the place. I remember there was a big fridge for a night shift. There was lots of food, but there was lots of drink that night. And I remember getting so drunk and still doing drawings and doing illustrations and putting them in pages. And then phoning my wife saying, please come and pick me up. So I'm so drunk, can't take the train back. And there's my daughter there. She was like 3 weeks old and she bundled her in the car and it was freezing. It was snowing outside and came and picked me up from teletext because I was just from film. Oh, that was, yeah. Yes.
Why were you doing a night shift?
I don't know. It was when I wasn't in marketing. I think I was in editorial at that time.
Right.
Before I moved back down.
I think I was only ever once asked to do a night shift. And yeah. That was over Christmas, the year before it launched. And I just told him to bugger off. I wasn't going to do that.
Oh, I just
Tim, you did night shifts.
Yeah. I just needed the money. I would have taken it.
Fair enough.
What sort of things would you have edited overnight, though?
Well, I never did one, so I don't know. Dan, keep up. I didn't do one. Don't look at me. Ask Steve.
It was conditional. What things would you have done?
Well, pictures of Frank Butcher out of EastEnders, I think.
That sounds like
we've established this.
Yeah, it sounds like another challenge to me. So we've got the bacon roll and yep. Frank Butcher.
Bring back Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Bacon roll, sweetheart.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I've gone through all my questions. So I'd like to throw this open to the floor once again. It's the Q&A section. So if any of you have any questions you'd like to field, not digitizer related. Everybody's
talking
about hands.
By the way, can
here.
I just say, we've had one question in this box for the Q&A. This box was for you.
Yes.
Because we thought, you know, no one's going, when we go on the Digi Q&A later, anyone got any questions? No one's going to put their hand up. So we provided you a box. One person's put a question in. Shocking. You can ask anything. Go on, just give it a go after this.
Go on. Oh.
Did the different versions of teletext that were available over the years enable you to do more with the more colours that were available and various different things?
Steve, do you ever play with level 2?
Yeah, I've been playing with it now. I mean, I think I saw it when I was working at teletext.
This
I saw it
level
demoed.
2, by the way. There was a version of teletext called level 2 that had more colours.
But it never picked up, did it? We never... But, I mean, I don't like it. I mean, I like it, but I think given too many options takes away from the charm of the original teletext. If we start putting in all the colours we want when we want to, you still got to have the restrictions of only having a certain amount of colours on the screen. You can't go put 256 colours on the screen still. You've still got to have your command blocks all in place, so you still got to have black borders or hold graphics. So it still limits what you can do. It actually makes it harder, I think, to have the newer versions make it harder, because you've got to make it look good in level 1 and level 2. So it's got to look both, you know, and you've got to make it look good with that limited amount of colours you've still got. Even though level 2, you can have 2,500 colours. I can't remember what it is now. So you can have thousands of colours.
Is there a sort of, because I haven't played with it, is there a sort of goldy colour in there?
You can pretty much get every colour you can make. Yeah, you can display, but it can be a limited amount again. You just replace one colour with another. So you find the code and you replace your green with whatever color green or whatever shade or whatever color you want. But it doesn't really enhance the graphics as such, I don't think. That's
my memory. I remember doing a Turn of the Worm strip because the level two guys came in to demonstrate it to us at Teletext. And I remember I played around with Turn of the Worm, but I just remember there being kind of really rich gold colors. I think I did like a kind of Indiana Jones scene with gold statues. But yeah, it was basically the same resolution pixels pretty much.
Yeah, exactly the same look, exactly the same feel. You just replace yellow with gold. But if you haven't got level two television, you'd have to look in yellow still, so you wouldn't see those enhanced colors. But I think I think for level two had to be something more special than that, really, to make it worthwhile.
Well, I'm having a memory that I'd completely forgotten about until now. Whoever these guys were that came in to demonstrate level two, I was asked by the editor, or the then editor, to do a wish list of what I would want from level two Teletext. And I remember designing, just with pencil and paper, an interface of how to... And that had a cursor, a mouse cursor on it. I remember doing it, and it was kind of basically a rip-off of MS Paint, what I drew, but I said something like this, and I want this feature and that feature. There you go. So did we answer your question? No.
Yeah, well, it was never really never rolled out in the UK then.
No, I mean, Dan, you might know more about level two than Steve and I. Nope.
But the level two editors I'm playing around with now, I mean, I do enjoy it. I've got half a dozen or so I've done in level two. And they can look so much better because you have those extra colours. You can make, you know, Martin Clunes without a shirt look like Martin Clunes without a shirt, which was somebody's request. I can't remember who asked me to do that one.
It was very authentic. It was basically the internet happened. So by the time I and Steve came to work at Teletext, it was already an obsolete medium. It was 1993. You know, we were kind of 2 years away from the internet really exploding. It had been around for 20 years almost by that point. In fact, it probably had been for 20 years at that point. So there wasn't really, to have rolled it out nationally, you would have had to have put new hardware into TV sets, and you know, who would want that when you had the internet? So anyone else?
Oh, just to add to that.
Oh, sorry, Dan, I'm taking over your panel.
In level two, you can have the colour orange, which means that you can depict Donald Trump's face in the correct manner. Yes. Sorry. Question?
How did you implement reveal panels, and what were the technical limitations around them? So, like, could you have a reveal image over another image, or could you not, or would you have to duplicate the image and then add in extra stuff?
It was the same as you had to input one of these codes. It was a revealo code, and that would hide. I don't think it was just reveal, wasn't it? It wasn't like a, and then there wasn't one to kind of un. Yeah, but you could put a reveal code in before a graphic, say, and then you could put another code up the other side of the graphic, so you could have a graphic afterwards that wasn't hidden under a reveal. And you could also have a background, so you could have like a white reveal and a blue background, and you could put a reveal code in there and hide the white bit and keep the blue background. So,
did you ever use background reveal? Very technical question.
I don't know what that is.
You just mentioned background reveal.
Well, no, a background with a reveal over the top of it. So probably not, because I always hated using background colours. I always preferred to have a blackboard around anything that I drew.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's not a lot of background colours on Digitizer, is there? Yeah.
No.
It was your calling card, wasn't it? The black background.
Yeah.
So, yes. Any more questions?
Are you?
Back.
I'm not really understanding the technical differences between standard Teletext and what you call held or held graphics, not why Oracle could do that, but you couldn't, for example. The only difficulty with held graphics is that nobody really understands how it works. It was right there from the start, and some people use it, some people never master the edge. It's just that it's just a bit difficult to use, but it does allow you to do more than one colour on a background without having a black border.
Yeah, I think I'm like Paul. I actually prefer the black background, the black border around a especially if you're doing a cartoon, an image, it's, sometimes it looks neater, I think. But that's just personal preference. And I think the reason we didn't do it just out of personal preferences rather than any other reason. So, you know, it does work, but we just didn't really use it.
Yes, I'd say that there are ways of getting around held functions. There's other ways of achieving the same sort of goals than using held.
Yeah, it's just something I never really got into. I've always just preferred back. You know, if you can build it around a black background, it can look much better, I think. A lot neater.
Okay. Any more questions? Gentleman in the second row.
Did you have any guidelines about the content, like putting in gore or sex or anything like that? And what was the most risque thing you got away with?
I'm sure some people know what the most risque thing I got away with on Teletext was. It was on my very last day. The guidelines were, you know, what you could have on TV. I mean, Teletext got into a lot of trouble at the beginning because they had a section called, After Hours. Was that what it was called, Dan? You've corrected me on this before.
Yes.
Yeah, After Hours, which was supposedly an adult section that had kind of sex tips. And there was a comic strip that ran on there. Originally, that was going to be, they tried to get the license from Viz to do a Sid the Sexist and Roger Melly comic strip. So I drew on, in Teletext, a Roger Melly and Sid the Sexist strip, which was, the script was provided by this guy who claimed to work for Viz. But when I think Teletext contacted Viz, they had never heard of this guy. So I don't know who he was. I don't know how he conned his way in there. But he ended up coming up with this character called Turn of the Screw, because I'd kind of done Turn of the Worm, who was a, Turn of the Screw was a prison warder. And that was on the After Hours section and had kind of swearing and stuff in it. But I think that got taken down because it got, they used, am I right in thinking, Dan, that they used basically the kids' pages? So basically, at a certain time of night, the kids' pages would disappear and
yes,
be replaced, and I kid thee not, with advice about anal sex. And this is what happened, was that they, one day, the pages in a certain region didn't update back to the kids' pages, and so the kids went on looking for Turn of the Worm and Glug's Funnies, or whatever they're called, and frame it, and got something else. So that got axed fairly short, sharpish after that. Tim, is that all? That's
Danny Tortoise's hair?
Oh, that. Oh, yes. Yeah, that was quite. Yeah, there was an. I don't know. We had obsession with EastEnders characters, and there was this one EastEnders cat. Sorry, this is in terms of most risque thing we got away with. Definitely Danny Tortoise's hair, far worse than the real Turn of the Worm. Yeah, Danny Tortoise, my God. It was this character in EastEnders who had a wig. He was this brilliant character. Look him up. There's a really weird scene. If you do a search on YouTube for Danny Tortoise, EastEnders, he was like a nightclub singer or something, wasn't he? And there's a weird scene where Phil Mitchell's playing with his wig on the bar and he's going, nye, 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 with it. But we featured him as a character on Digitizer for a while, and basically his hair, for some reason, we depicted it as basically it was just an erect penis on top of his head and a pair of testicles.
There was a moment when it started
Yeah, and then, do you remember we got a letter from someone, again, days before smartphones and things where people could print stuff out, and it's basically someone had drawn a picture of it, and had drawn a picture of it with an arrow pointing to the thing on the head, say, with the caption, possible cock and balls, question mark. And it was like, we should probably take this down now, before we get fired. So yeah, it was that. Danny Torres's hair.
Did you ever draw anything naughty, Steve?
No, it was very limited what you could do with the palm trees. But, no. No.
Not even with horses? No. That's a missed opportunity, I believe.
Do you know, it was, but they were paying quite well. I didn't want to risk it.
Well, for some reason I was prepared to risk my job, livelihood, home, and children's kind of security.
But of course, you never were sacked, but now we're going into digitized territory. More questions, do you think?
Anyone else?
Yes?
Did you ever look at CFAX and Oracle, and did Channel 5 ever have Teletext of its own? Did you ever look at them and think, how are they doing what they're doing, or we should copy that, or I need to meet the guy that's making that stuff. Did you ever meet anybody from the other channels?
Not until recently. There's a guy called Darren Locke, if you look him up on Twitter, who worked for one of the... Did we establish who he works for, Dan? Or worked for... Was it Paramount Text or someone?
He worked for some of the cable channels, I believe. Yeah. UK Gold. Sorry?
Paramount. Thank you. Yeah, Darren Locke, who I've recently semi-befriended until he gave the New Meridian album a bad review the other day on his YouTube channel. Two mentions of Meridian in this panel. That's pretty good. I didn't think I was going to do any. So, no, because I didn't have Teletext at home, believe it or not. I had a Teletext TV when I started, because I remember watching the end of Oracle, and I remember watching that at midnight with the... If any of you are familiar with the way Oracle ended, it kind of had this really tragic... kind of passive-aggressive countdown to kind of the end of the world or something like that, or the end, I don't know. They had some real nasty dig at Teletext, probably quite rightly. We had stolen the license off them. But sometime after that, whatever telly I got after that didn't have Teletext on it, so I never watched Teletext at home, just in the office. And so, no, Tim and I were offered a job. Do you remember doing Fox, was it Fox Kids or something like that? Nickelodeon, Nicktext. And in fact, I found something the other day which... said that they offered us $8,000 a year between the two of us to do it. Yeah, no, seriously. It was...
Nicktext had some great graphics. I wonder who did them.
Not me. Mm. $8,000 for $4,000 a year for a full-time job.
Grand per viewer as well.
I was one of those viewers. So, Paul, I forgot my question. It was about when Teletext ended, but I've totally forgotten it. So talk among yourselves. Give us another question. I'll try and remember it.
Thanks. Yeah, you both talked about joining Oracle and then subsequently leaving. What are the exact years that you joined and left?
Well, me, I joined September 92. So Teletext went on air on January the 1st. I mean, the way I ended up there, it was all to do with Ladbrokes again. Some guy I worked with, a guy called Nick Ilston, if I remember. Do you remember Nick Ilston? I had a call one day in August 92 from a guy called John Home, who was the first editor of Teletext, and they'd had a graphics person in the department, and Teletext was kind of getting closer to being on air, but I think this person, I can't remember, there was some story about why they couldn't continue at Teletext. Sorry that I can't remember, so it's not very funny anecdote or very interesting. And yeah, I remember John's words where he rang me up and said, oh, I understand. He had this kind of really fruity voice, didn't he? Kind of Johnny was like kind of proper real old school kind of Fleet Street hack. And his office always stunk of kind of cigarettes and stuff. He was brilliant, John Harm. The first editor of Teletext was absolutely kind of smashing bloke. Yeah, he rang me out and he said, oh, I understand you're a Teletext wizard. That's not a very good impression, was it? He looked like Bruce Forsyth, didn't he? I always thought. He looked like a bit like constantly chain smoking. It was just like one fag after another. So yeah, so August kind of 92, I was asked in and trekked to Fulham, and I sat down and did some graphics and looked at some of the stuff that my predecessor, as it turned out to be, had done. And then they offered me a job there and then. And I was the only, for a long time, the only employee at Teletext who had a full-time contract. Everyone else was on I haven't got the balls to do something like that anymore, but they offered me a six-month contract, and I said, no, I want a permanent one. So I was the only person. And I think even like the kind of senior editorial staff had like six-month contracts and stuff, and I was the only one who had a permanent one. So where was I? Yeah, September. So September 92, we went on air January the 1st, 93, and then I left. I'm not quite sure when I left and went freelance, but I worked in the building probably for, I don't know, 5 years. And then, yeah. Still doing the odd bit of graphics, but it became less and less as the years went on.
I think I started around late 95, early 96, because I think it was just after you were born. And then I left after about a year to work for this advertising agency who basically did thousands. They had so many clients, I think, through the holidays. So I then think to spend another year and a half, 2 years, maybe 3 years doing graphics for Teletext through this advertising agency. So that was about, so I left about 99, I think.
Paul, I've remembered my question. Would you like to hear it?
I'd love to, Dan.
When Teletext ended, they did a special section featuring classic pages from the history of Teletext. And one of them was a classic Frame It page of two dinosaurs in uncompromising positions. Were you responsible for converting this piece of artwork? And can you tell us what was going on?
I don't know. I mean, quite possibly. I mean, I didn't ever make up the Frame Its. They were always genuine pictures that kids had drawn in. Again, we didn't scan them. I just had to redraw them by hand. The Frame Its were in the kids' section. It was like a kids' gallery. If any of you are old enough to remember Take Heart or anything like that, they'd send in pictures and, yeah, I'd redraw them. So I don't know. You need pictorial evidence of this.
I know. Unfortunately, we can't put the projector on because it would be in our eyes. So you'll just have to imagine the two dinosaurs doing something.
Oh, look, there we go.
Oh, here it is.
There they are. Oh, dear. He's rubbed that belly raw, hasn't he? That scaly back.
So, sorry. So, the drawings that kids sent into Frame It, generally, what were they? Were they mostly the same thing, like cats and dogs?
I don't remember. I can remember. Sorry, this is getting onto digitizer. But I can remember when we did a competition where we asked viewers to send in jokes or something. No, it was a question about dolphins. It was for an Echo the Dolphin thing. We used to get some funny answers from kids. I remember jokes as well, because I used to do Glug's jokes. That was another thing. Glug the Slug, it was Turn of the Worm's friend. Kids used to send in jokes to that. What was the one about? I remember the punchline. I'm just trying to remember the feed line for it. Oh, yeah, how do you keep cool at a football match? Stand next to a fanny. That was possibly my favourite.
And did you publish that?
No.
Oh. A pity. Another missed opportunity in the history of Teletext. Yeah, another missed opportunity to get sacked.
I didn't write it. It was like a six-year-old.
Yes, but you would have been responsible for publishing it. You couldn't blame the six-year-old for being sacked from Teletext.
For getting me sacked.
Yes.
I'm glad that her parents split up.
Oh, great. So, do we have any more questions? Oh, Violet.
Violet Bellin.
Do you remember that every now and again you used to do a picture and you would say, press reveal? They were ace. Why didn't you do more of those?
So, Violet asks, why did
Mr. Piffer
do more?
He had loads of those on the letters page. It was like every day. My favourite revealos were getting into digitizer. But Tim, he used to go, because Ladbrokes and other bookmakers used to advertise quite a lot on Teletext. And Tim used to go and take random words from bookmakers' adverts and put those as reveals. So someone would write in a letter and kind of ask, when is the CD32 coming out or something? And Tim would put press reveal to find out. And I remember my favourite one, it was just like the words in massive letters. It just said, massive E's. That was my favourite. We did loads of reveals every day.
I was just always surprised you didn't do more, and I imagine that it was because it was just a big effort.
No, because a lot of the time. Yeah. Yeah, by cutting and pasting from the bookmakers' pages. My favourite one was probably in the last week, which was which I went a bit nuts in my final week on Digi. There was one with a picture of a guy going like that and going on about, it's Richie, why are you hiding my insulin, Richie? that was my favourite one. Don't know how they allowed that to go through.
I'm conscious of the fact that all these questions are for Paul, but the danger of adding to that. In a previous edition of the Teletext Star podcast, you claimed that on the final, I think it's the final day of Digitizer, you hid a message. And I have been trying to find this message, well, not solidly, but at least twice over the past 2 months, and I've been completely unable to find it.
Down the left-hand side, I think, of all the reviews.
Of all the reviews.
Yeah, I'm sure it... I mean, the... effort it took to make... This is digitizer, Dan. What are you doing? The effort it took to kind of get the text to scan right and also spell out swear words down the left-hand side was monumental. And I made damn sure that went to air. So keep looking.
I will. So, any more questions?
So, at the time when you were making the pages, they were all, you know, they all disappeared because until recent technological innovations, it's not been possible to sync the pages again. Was that frustrating, doing all this work and then having it just disappear after a day or two? And then also, now you can see some of your work again revived. What was it like seeing it again for the first time after so long?
Yeah, I mean, teletext is one of those things to say it disappeared. I thought it had gone forever. I didn't think I'd ever see it again, ever do it again, ever. You know, I never thought this would happen, ever. I mean, then, but to see it all come back. But it was something we just did and it went. I think it's, you know, it was a disposable form. It's, I mean, even now, websites, everybody does a web page and it's always there. We can always find it somewhere. But I'd never thought we'd ever be able to recover teletext pages.
I mean, you know, he's not listening. He's too busy watching Steve Martin. But we do owe him a massive debt, Jason, because he, you know, I mean, I, for a long time, laboured under the belief that digitizer was actually rubbish and people just remembered it fondly in the way they sort of remember Monty Python. I'm not dissing Monty Python. I love Monty Python. But I think when you watch it, a lot of it's rubbish. And a lot of Digi is still rubbish. But actually, a lot of it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be, and seeing the pages kind of come back, you know, I don't remember what I wrote. I mean, you know, I wrote it for 10 years and, you know, it finished 13 years ago, something like that now. You know, I was saying to someone earlier that, you know, it's been gone for longer than it was there. So, I mean, it was an enormous amount of stuff. So when I read it now, I'm reading it, you know, like I didn't write it. You know, it's kind of new to me, you know, as it was to people at the time. So yeah, it's just brilliant that there is some of it able to have been saved. What is interesting though is clearly, because it's coming from VHS tapes, is how heavily slanted the archives are towards Christmas editions of digitizer, because that's clearly when people were recording the TV the most. But it does mean kind of all our pantos are saved, which is nice, because I thought we'd never see David Belt and the Seven Dwarves again.
We did also find the Nightmare edition of Bamboozle.
What?
Yes.
Seriously?
It's been uncovered.
When are we going to see this?
This is one of Alistair Buxton's recoveries, though. The other person who is doing teletext recoveries.
Yeah, because I remember doing that, and I loved doing that. And it was, we only, I think, did two. What are you pointing at?
Something saucy.
09, 30, 18, 18, 18. Here's Man with Two Brains.
Nothing.
Chat line.
Yes.
Teletext chat. Call now.
Were there many teletext chat lines on Teletext Limited? And did you ever have to do any art for it?
That probably would have been you, Steve, wouldn't it?
I don't ever remember doing any. I really don't. I think that was obviously... A
lot of premium rate competitions.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite envious when I was looking at your archive of adult teletext material. Nobody ever asked me to do any. It's just... that would have put a bit more spice into the job.
After what happened with After Hours, I think they were running scared of any adult material. No wonder they hated us, Tim.
Well, of course, we're free to do whatever we like now. Yes. We could start a project.
People might look at my website.
You said that to Steve very seductively there, Dan.
Yes.
We could start a project.
Yes.
Just you and me.
It's the start of a gigantic empire and certain other gigantic things. Never mind.
It's been a long day, Dan.
Been a long, hard day. So anybody, any more questions to save us?
Well, put some questions in that bloody box, for God's sake, for this evening, or it's going to be very short.
Okay.
No, it's not going to be short. It's going to go on for ages. You'll be sick of us.
Sorry. It has been a long day. So I think this just about wraps up this panel. Do we have anything to say in closing?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, buy raffle tickets, because we're giving away, you know, Mr. T, which we'll sign. We're giving away, Carl has provided us with. But, Dan, you know, you were in it earlier. What are we giving away? Because perhaps there are some new people.
Well, we've got the palm tree. We've got a Teletext Raspberry Pi, which is pretty much ready to plug in, courtesy of Peter Kwan, who's sitting over there. And some other stuff. I believe we've got the data discs recording there, the vinyl, the red vinyl of Streets of Rage.
And a big teletext remote control, haven't we, or something?
Yes, which is going to be signed by everybody.
Yeah. So we'll do the kind of, I don't know, draw for that this evening.
Well, what about Mr. T?
Yes, Mr. T as well. I mentioned him.
Well, I did we'll say at the beginning, him. We forgot. We asked for questions for Mr. T. Oh. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. T? Yes.
What day do the recycling bins go out?
I'm not doing an impression of him. I did a thing on YouTube where I did a voice, a kind of slightly, I don't know, posh actorly voice as Mr. T. And yes. Everyone hated it. It's like Mr. T doesn't sound like that. Well, that's the joke.
Stay away from my bins.
It doesn't sound any like Mr. T. He's talking like this.
You know what that
means? T here, everyone. Yes, I know. Hello. That doesn't sound like Mr. T.
Do you know what that reminded me of? That stay away from my bins. Knife and Wife. Have you opened the can of worms?
Well, what do you mean?
The animated short.
Yes.
Knife and
it
Wife.
It wasn't short. It was a half hour.
Half hour then.
It was rubbish.
It wasn't that bad.
It was like I had a plant in the audience. Wasn't that bad?
I liked
there
it.
There was someone over there going, yeah, it was. And then kind of had a... Anyway.
I thought it was quite good.
Okay, good. I haven't got what you want me to say about it. Oh, Terry Jones was in it, but bless him. He was obviously not very well these days. Yeah. We passed on the way here, didn't we? It was he's DJing at Terry Jones is DJing at a pub on the way. I'm not even kidding. He said DJ Terry Jones. And Mile and a Half said to me, oh, Terry Jones. The bloke from Monty Python. Yeah, that's right. He's DJing in this pub.
The Teletext Artists Panel at DigiFest 2016, ladies and gentlemen. That is where we're going to end it.
Yeah, well, stick around for tonight. It should be interesting.
Thank you very much. Stay away from my beans.